On this episode of the Dudes and Dads podcast, we talk with our friend Mark Graff, the most interesting man in the world.
Joel.
Andrew, hello.
I'm looking forward to this episode.
It's highly hyped, highly anticipated. We can only go down from here. But
speaking of, did you see my graphic for the YouTube?
I did.
On this? So essentially, you told me locomotive, oil rig.
Yes.
And so I said, give me a picture of a locomotive and an oil rig. And I somehow think that the oil rig ended up on the locomotive.
Yeah, which is, I don't think, physically possible, but we'll find out if there are oil rigs on locomotives later in the episode, I'm sure. I'm sure we'll find out. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dudes and Dads podcast. Glad to have each and every single one of you along for the ride. Looking forward to the conversation this evening. Andy, what's going on in your world right now? What's happening?
Oh, man.
Fill me in.
This weekend was just nuts, crazy. Like, just lots of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Tennis matches. So this is the greatest thing. So my son goes to all my kids go to Fairfield.
Yes.
And he's on the tennis team.
Yes.
And they do what they call the Fairfield Invitational.
Okay.
Which is Fairfield playing Fairfield playing Fairfield. They split up into three different teams.
This sounds fun.
And they do an Invitational. And then they figure out which team won. And it's
fun.
It's fun. Because then, like, this weekend, they mix up all of the partners and everything, too. So yeah. You play with somebody else. My son actually got to play with one of the coaches, and he did a great job.
But that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, we did some JV football on Saturday. That was good. We're getting prepped for my kid over in Goshen schools. I got a dual school situation, as we talked about last time. Getting ready for marching band season to be in full swing. And I'm having that experience, gentlemen, where you volunteered for something because you believe in it and you want to support the children of our community, and you get to spend time with your kid doing these things, and it's all great. But I will say, it's a landslide. It's a volunteer landslide is what it is when you're starting the season off the beginning, there's just so much to do and not enough time to do it. And I do often think, if really I've bitten off more than I can chew. But we're about ready this next weekend to launch in our first marching band invitation. Will be over at the University of Toledo. The Rockets? Yes. University of Toledo Rockets.
Okay.
And I'm sure there's a story there why they're the Rockets. Can't tell you why. But be marching on their in their stadium. It's pretty cool. But we have to leave. See, this just goes to show you. Guys, I'm getting old. early mornings for me. Saturdays are meant for a little bit of sleeping in, yeah, a little bit of relaxing.
Right.
But we will be hitting the road promptly at 4 a.m. this coming Saturday morning for the University of Toledo. Again, I've asked the question, what have I done? Why have I made these choices? But here we are. That's the kickoff of that. We've got fall ball. Both of us get the fall softball things with our youngest kiddos.
Yeah.
And they're enjoying that, I think.
I think so.
Why not? And let me see. We got fall baseball with my son as well. So he was at Trine University this morning. Good pitching outing. And then I feel like there's other stuff. But it's strangely a lot going on. And I'm enjoying it. But most importantly, we're here together, Andy.
We are.
We're here to talk about, as always, we'd like to acknowledge the many people that support us, that cheer us on, that shout from all corners of multiple counties, keep it up, dudes and dads, keep it up. But apart from those people, we also have official sponsors.
We do. So support for this podcast comes from Everence Financial, helping individuals and organizations combine faith and finances through retirement planning, banking, and other financial services. More at everence.com/Michiana. Everence offers financial products subject to regulatory regulations. Visit everence.com for more details.
Thank
you, Everence. And also Avad Chiropractic.
Thank
you, Avad Chiropractic, for keeping us in line both physically and on the show.
Oh, so good. Physical alignment, emotional alignment, spiritual alignment, and operational alignment. Avad Chiropractic and Wellness. We thank you to them for their support as well.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Andrew, our guest, Mark, he's on the show. And I want to tell you how Mark got on the show. Mark and I were sitting in a slight, we'll call it downpour, a consistent rain, JV football. And Jackie, my wife, said, you know, who you should have on the show is Mark. He was in the next pop up easy up tent next to us as we were huddled under there under the rain. And I said, really?
Tell me more.
And she said, he's known around our workplace as the most interesting man in the world. And I said, this sounds exactly like the kind of guest we need to have on. And so I looked across the way and I said, Mark, how do you feel about podcasts? And he said, I'm down. I'm interested. He, by the way,
he didn't say what's a podcast.
No, he didn't ask. He didn't ask anything. Any sort of deeper questions. Apparently there's a level of trust, hopefully, that he already has with my wife to not completely set him up for something weird and strange. So here he is with us. Mark, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
This is really, because here's the deal. My wife has given me a little bit of an overview, and I'm interested in these various tidbits of your life. Let's put it this way. I think there's a golden thread here. I think there's probably some things that are going to tie all this together. But in the meantime, I want to hear about your family, but I want to hear about some of these more interesting jobs, because I think that some of the jobs that you've had are not ones that are, are not like the details of those jobs or sort of the behind the scenes pieces of the jobs are not widely known. People kind of hear about them in general, and then they are like, oh, that might be interesting, but they don't know the ins and outs. And I will say, again, my wife in general gave just some details. And so I want to follow up on all this. So before all that, we'd like to start off our guests with asking about the dad stats.
So the dad stats are just wife, kids, family, hobbies, those things.
Where are you from? Yeah. Like all the stuff.
Which side of the tracks are you on?
Yeah. Which side of the tracks are you from? Okay. And go.
Yeah. Born and raised in Syracuse.
Oh, all right.
Moved from Syracuse to Warsaw in 2009. Mm. 2010, moved to Fort Wayne. 2012, moved to North Dakota.
As one does.
2020, easy transition.
Yes.
2024, moved back to Indiana here in Goshen.
Okay.
I have 5 kids.
Yes, you do.
3 biological.
Yes.
2 adopted.
Yes.
From North Dakota. And
you're married.
I'm married to an amazing human being named Abby. Mm-hmm. She works with me at V-Rail.
Oh, my. Okay.
So if she can tolerate me, she's pretty awesome.
That's awesome.
And
you've been married how long? Uh-oh.
See, no.
Andy,
you get a, you,
okay. I get in trouble for this.
Right.
16 years.
It is 2025.
No, 17 years.
17 years. Okay.
2008. We were married 06, 07, 08.
Oh, God.
Oh, that's easy to remember.
Thank you.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. That's good. So, okay. So obviously like a fair amount of like moving around. What did young Mark think that he was going to do vocationally as you were growing up? Like what was like, okay, I want to grow up to be XYZ.
Absolutely no plan whatsoever.
Nice.
None at all. That was a reed in the wind.
Okay.
When it came to that.
Do you feel like, is that like your, would you say that's the kind of person you are? Kind of this like, go where the wind blows me sort of person, or?
It has been for the better part of my life. I think with age, it's not quite so severe.
Okay.
I'm not moving to another state anytime soon. So
do you, Andy and I have talked about this some recently, like in this age. So Mark, if you don't mind asking, how old are you now?
I am 39.
Okay. Right. Okay. So you're 39. So I'm 41. Andy's a little bit older than
I'm a little bit older.
Just a little bit older than that.
A little bit.
And we have talked about realizing this, like, you know, as we get older, our tolerance for risk and change, like feeling like that does shift, right?
Yeah.
And when you look back at the 20-year-old Mark, like what you were willing to do, places you're willing to go, whatever, and shift, the reality is now, obviously, as you have a, you know, you have a wife, you have kids, like all those sort of things. Is, do you feel like, okay with your, is there like a little bit of still like wanderlust in your, in left in you somewhere? Or do you feel like, hey, where I've landed right now in life is, like, it feels good.
I feel good. I feel happy where I'm at in life right now. I did just buy a powered parachute.
Yes.
So, yes.
So the risk is still,
so
there.
So the risk is still there. Sweet. Risk is still there. Sweet. I don't want to fall into monotony.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think that's the biggest thing.
Got it. Okay. So talk to me about, you've had some interesting jobs.
Yes.
And those interesting jobs, were all those interesting jobs in the North, with like, you had one in North Dakota. You're just, take me through the interesting job catalog, yeah, kind of
so,
timeline.
So Joel said, hey, we have a guest. And I said, oh yeah, tell me about it. And he said, well, he's got interesting jobs. And so I'm really interested to hear
what
you have to say.
So, there's a list.
Yes.
Dude, I'll just, I can, we can spitfire and
perfect.
Then come, okay. Fiberglass repairman, forklift driver, RV electrician, railroad conductor, third shift forklift driver at a grocery store, bike technician, oil field. I was a, what's called a production testing hand, field assistant, business founder and owner, worship pastor, salesman, and now project manager for an R&D department.
Yeah. Okay.
So a wide range of things.
Yeah. Wide range of things. When you moved out to North Dakota, so what part of North Dakota were you living in?
Minot.
Minot.
Why not Minot?
Why not? Why not?
That's the catchphrase. So,
is the local chamber using that as their slogan? Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
They should be if they're not. Yes. Okay. Okay.
Yes.
So, so what did you? Because you were here in Indiana and you moved out there. Mm-hmm. And what in the world makes one move from this lovely sanctuary we have here to the wild plains of North Dakota?
2008.
Okay.
And nine. That's what made.
Yeah.
That was the big deciding factor.
Because you were, what were you doing here at that time?
At the time, I was going to school at IPFW, working by necessity at anything that I could get. Mm-hmm. So, in a 2-year, I was furloughed from the railroad in 2009, the beginning of 2009, and there was no work.
Gotcha.
Hence the move to Fort Wayne, started school.
Okay.
Anything to get moving forward. The only place that was hiring at the time, I think, was Meyer. So I worked third shift at Meyer as a forklift driver and first shift at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Yes.
As a bike technician and then
got
school
it
full time.
Okay.
And kid.
For those of you that have not worked third shift at a grocery store, it can be strangely wild.
I've not done it at the grocery store, but I did it at a machine shop.
Okay.
All which is also mind numbing.
Yes.
For a third shift.
And for those of us that have worked third shift, you are working a time when the rest of the world is not conscious. Right. And you get into this weird zombie rhythm of, like your day is ending when everyone is waking up and you're like wandering out of your place of your employment.
Yeah.
And you're like, I gotta go find a dark place to, I gotta put rubber over the windows to block out and find a few hours of sleep. It's against creation.
Right.
I think it's against the way you're I'm assuming for you at Meyer. So I worked third shift. I had a third shift Walmart job in the freezer section. Cause nothing says fun, Andy, like stacking cheese at 2 a.m. in the morning.
In the cold.
In the cold. Am I right?
I agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are, I just remember those times. Like, you, you're doing whatever you got to do.
Yeah.
You're doing whatever you have to do, but it's hard to stay positive. Yeah. It's a little hard to stay positive.
Yeah.
Cause I was in school. I was doing that. Okay. But you, okay. And I want to step back, cause I gotta get the timeline right. You were working for the railroad.
Yep. So I'm working for the railroad
at a pretty young age.
Yeah. And it was kind of a joke. We were working at Keystone and I was completely happy with that. My brother was very interested in the railroad.
Okay.
Norfolk Southern was having open interviews. My brother really wanted to go and go through the interview process. Didn't want to go alone. He said, "Hey, you should roll with me up here." I'm like, "I really don't want to spend a day in a bunch of conference rooms."
Yeah.
So I went with him, and as pure boredom, mm-hmm. fluke, did all the paperwork and took all the tests.
Okay.
They hired both of us. They hired, out of like 6,000 interviewees,
no!
They hired 7 people.
Okay.
My brother and I were 2 of them.
Oh, okay. Man. Yeah.
So what? Okay. So you have to take tests. You say you have to take tests.
Yeah.
And were these tests that one can study for?
They had some aptitude tests.
Okay.
But clearly he just went and didn't
like go. Cold turkey. Was, yeah. You just went in.
I was kind of angry to go. to be honest, yeah. I really had no desire to be there.
Okay. So you get the job.
Yeah.
And you're like, I guess I have to take this.
Right.
Because it was better than where you were with Keystone. Okay.
Because the railroad carries that connotation of, I mean, this is a job that you can retire from.
Sure. With. Right. Right.
So immediately after the decided to hire the 2 of us, we had to leave, go to Georgia for a month.
Oh, wow.
For training.
And at this point, were you married or no?
No, but I was dating my wife.
Okay.
So
you're like,
right when we started. Ya? Yeah, basically. We started dating and I peaced out.
Okay.
For a month. Came back and
I just try to imagine dating my wife like hey, I really want to invest in this relationship, but I'll be
out of commission for 1 month.
The railroad calls.
The railroad calls. That's right. When it calls, you answer.
Yes. Okay. So you're down to Georgia.
I was there for a month.
And what do they do in that month? What are you learning?
So you're learning all of the different signal readings for all of the different railroads that have been absorbed over the years.
Okay.
Because when a railroad company purchases another railroad company, 9 times out of 10, they keep the signal.
Interesting.
That's there. They don't get rid of any.
Okay.
You accumulate knowledge of 3 colored lights in different patterns, meaning
different things.
Many different things.
Okay.
So you
have initially the role of conductor. Explain to us, because I think when people think of conductor, like they think old timey train conductor, and they're not sure. Like what?
All aboard!
Yeah. What are the roles and responsibilities?
Yeah. So the easiest way to explain a conductor and an engineer is the engineer physically moves the train. He controls forward and backward movement. Mm-hmm. Different. Monitors air pressure and brakes and things like that. The conductor is the one who steers the train. The conductor is in charge of maintaining safety for wherever the locomotive engineer can't see.
Okay.
So if you have to go down another track, he'll pull all the way through. You'll throw the switches, bring him back, stop him.
Gotcha.
Break cars apart, build trains.
Does this feel like a really scary job initially? Because we're dealing with massive machines, massive weight, and the implication I feel like for a misstep is pretty significant.
So they did. That was one element of the training when we went down. Was we could like nightmare story time?
Yes.
Where they were, everyone had a story about somebody. Theirs was. You'll see someone, most likely you'll hit someone in the first 5 years.
Okay.
And then the other one was if you get a limb severed, don't reach in to grab it.
Oh,
Okay.
Cause apparently that's happened a lot of times. Arm's gone, reach in to grab it.
Other arm.
Second arm's gone.
Man.
Pretty morbid.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no. This is, I think this is the part
this is,
where
this is stuff you don't normally, I mean, yeah, hear
don't really hear. And because I think what we know, I mean, obviously for those of us, especially live in this county, we were, heck, I was here late tonight because I was train stopped on the tracks. I had to reroute around.
And interestingly enough, like I posted that on Facebook. I said, hey guys, we're running a little bit late.
Yeah.
Because as you know, in Goshen, trains happen.
So many trains.
Insider info.
Yes.
There is a little plate on at every railroad crossing that has a phone number on it.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
If the train has sat there for too long, feel free to call said phone number.
I love it.
Someone will probably get mad, but someone will definitely get yelled at.
Okay. Well, then that makes me feel better already that someone...
Yeah. Someone's going to get yelled at.
Someone's going to hear about it. so, okay. Because I think most of our experience with like with that profession specifically is we see the train go by. We see the guys, we see the engineers, they wave at you usually, you know, because they tend to be friendly, friendly people mostly.
Yeah.
But that's like the sum total of like, I think the normal person's experience, but there's so much that goes on. I mean, we have a couple of reasonably large train yards within proximity here. One in our county. And there's a ton of things that are going on there, switching trains, connecting, reconnecting, all of that. But in the process, like it is a dangerous, like no matter what, even in modern, like our modern reality, the trains have to be coupled, decoupled, like all of that regularly. What are the dangers with that? I mean, you've mentioned a severed limb, but what are the what are the dangers with that? Job.
I would say so. I was actually hit by a train.
Oh, okay.
And broke a few of my ribs.
Okay,
threw me down in between the wheels. But in a circumstance like that, I think the most dangerous thing is not knowing where you're at or what you're doing as a personnel.
Yeah.
Mm. So in my particular circumstance, there was a crew that had come into our yard. We were working on the opposite end of, we were building some trains. They came in to pick up their train. They weren't from our yard. They lined themselves into the wrong track and ran into the end of our train.
Oh, okay.
Sending the shockwave down.
All the way down.
Yeah. But I was in between two of the cars putting a handbrake on, and we had these things are called brake sticks, but basically, your arms are above your head, and I had a foot plate of a car just smoke me right in my rib cage, and kind of threw me quite a ways. I hit the tracks and just sat up, and then the wheels went right by.
Ugh.
So it was, it was a dangerous situation. It was pretty wild.
Yeah.
So I would say that second is just the amount of weight and the material that can be shipped in some of those cars is absolutely terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, the ones that I know, so my dad worked in automotive manufacturing for years, steel coils, for instance, real dangerous, right? Like that amount of density of weight, it's hard to wrap your brain around like the density of weight that you're talking about there. And the fact that a large car can only carry four of them, tells you something.
Yeah.
Cause we're getting as super morbid about this job as we possibly can. Cause we can't
wait till the pop quiz.
Yeah. 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 Right. What, someone mentioned to me, cause I maybe have seen this once in my life where there is a tent set up.
That's
around a train car.
Yeah.
What is happening if that's the case?
So, it's called the yellow tent, or at least it was the time when I worked at the railroad. If you are building trains, if for any reason you get coupled between the cars, they put a tent around you, bring you a phone, give you some time, and then they separate the train.
Oh,
and geez. At that point, obviously, sustain life. So,
right.
I've seen one of those.
And I would just imagine that. I'm imagining that there's plenty of safety videos around that phenomenon, but it still happens.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. You can get, I mean, like we talked earlier about third shift and mm-hmm. being just a, so I worked off of what was called the extra board. Everything's based off seniority. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have any seniority, 9 times out of 10, you're working off of what we call the extra board, which is, if a position opens up, if somebody calls in, if somebody has vacation days, whatever, they have a board of people, they'll just call the next person in line.
Okay.
The rules at the time that I was a conductor were 2 hours call to be on site. So you could have just worked an 8-hour shift, gone home. They call you at 6 hours for you to be there at 8.
Man.
And that's any time of day or night.
Mm-hmm.
You could work first shift, and then the next day you work third shift, and then the following day you're on second, and then you're back to first.
That's
and then
rough.
Second,
wow. Then, that's rough. Yeah. Wow.
And that's in the yard. The yard had actual shifts. The road doesn't. It's when the train's ready. Mm-hmm. That's when your shift starts. So when you're a road conductor or engineer, we were trained really quickly. Actually, there was even a portion of our training at school, which was when you're home, you sleep
mm-hmm.
no matter what time it is. So you train your body to be ready to go to work constantly. That was miserable.
Man,
I would rather have third shift any day than that.
Sure.
Right. Cause you don't have any idea. You can't prepare for that. You can't get your body ready to go.
Nope.
Man.
That was rough.
So are younger guys doing that? Like,
I don't think they do it anymore.
Okay.
So I have a nephew that actually just started working at the railroad a year ago, I believe, is when his training was up. But, and he hasn't mentioned anything like it.
Cause it just sounds like you're just asking for trouble.
Yeah, absolutely.
With running people that kind of,
that is kind not, of yeah.
schedules. Yeah. You're allowed one time to decline at mm-hmm. the time where it was, I can't go out. And then they would just call the list again. And, mm-hmm. when they got back to you 5 minutes later, you would, okay.
Yeah.
Jeez. No, I'm ready now.
So, yes. Yeah. Yes. Thank you for that.
Yes. So, all right. So you've had that job. You've had the oil rig.
Uh huh.
Where did you go between those two?
Between those two was actually the Meyer.
Okay.
Third shift.
Okay.
Dick Sporting Goods first shift.
And then
the oil
North,
rig.
North Dakota then called
the Great
you.
Dakota of North.
So how did you get there? How did you decide to go, okay, I'm going to go work on this rig?
So we had, obviously at the time there was, work was scarce. I had I believe the first person out there from our family was there was a cousin that had gone out through a company that he worked for. He was doing truck driving.
Hmm.
He knew that. So I have 4 brothers and myself. So 5 of us total. He knew that work in Indiana was null.
Mm.
So he had contacted my oldest brother and said, hey, things are absolutely nuts out here. You should come check it out. If worst case scenario doesn't work out, you go home. So my brother moved out, called my second brother within about a month and said, yeah, come out. He moved out. He called a couple more of us. We went out together, and it was life changing. Mm. It was the year before I moved out there. I think combined Abby and I made like $26,000 combined with a child.
Yep.
And one on the way. The first year there, I cleared 6 digits.
Wow.
I mean, it's entry level, like, nothing. You work nonstop. Mm-hmm. Like they pay you for your life.
Yes.
But at that time it was phenomenal.
So you head out there, and again, a little background information I had, your lodging situation when you move out there
because
you have to house in relatively, I mean, I don't know how remote you were, but mm-hmm. not major areas of housing available.
At the time, well, so in 2011, Minot, North Dakota flooded. the town, the city of Minot.
Okay.
So they are, we're already in a housing crisis.
Got it.
Declared a state of emergency, everything. I mean, I think the, so there's three rivers that run through Minot, and Minot's in a bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was their 100-year flood or something, something wild went and just destroyed. I think it was like 40 or 50% of all housing in the area.
Oh my goodness.
So you had that scenario, and they were in the middle of a massive oil boom.
Mm-hmm.
So housing was nothing. when we first moved out there, we lived in a, there was five men, adult men, living in a two-person RV, and we paid $1,200 a week
for
a camping spot.
Oh, my goodness.
Luckily, there was never more than three of us in the thing at a time.
Yeah.
Just because of our work schedules. And they did a ton of lodging for us when we went out of town.
Okay.
So it was awesome for those of us who weren't residents at the time. We weren't permanent because they would send us out to work in Watford City or Williston for months.
Oh, wow. Okay.
When they did that, there was housing.
Mm-hmm.
We stayed in man camps, which is, turns out that's where all of the RVs and campers from here go.
So, we've wondered. I've wondered for years, Andy,
right.
Because those of us that are have inevitably have touched upon the RV industry in our area,
which is most people who lived here,
which most people lived here. Yeah. I have at times wondered, where are all of these things going? Are we driving them off a cliff somewhere? Because because we see the the parking lots full of them. And it's like, how in the world?
There's not enough people to consume all these.
Well, apparently
there is.
Apparently that's where they're going.
North Dakota. Yeah. No, they had, for the longest time, they had man camps that housed thousands of people. And I can't remember what year it was. They finally shut them all down and whatever. But there were multiple man camps that were just their cities. With two-person RVs stacked front to back, side to side, thousands and thousands of them.
Man.
So, and that was luxury living.
Yeah. And so you're working in oil, working in oil fields. Yeah. And your job, what did your job include?
I did what's called production testing. So we would go out during the frack, post-frack. And then we would do a thing called treater watch, but basically we would go out and flow the wells back. So we go out with 15,000 PSI pipe and run it from the wellhead back to our pressurized vessels. So it's basically a semi-trailer with a massive pressure tank on it. And then through natural process, sand, water, oil, and gas separate from each other. And then we would ship them to different areas, clean up the wells, tell the companies how much oil and gas they were producing, and move to the next one.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you knew nothing about this industry. I mean, did you have any knowledge of this industry whatsoever?
Before I moved out there, I didn't realize that we produced, that the U.S. even produced, we had an oil field.
Gotcha.
We've got several and they're large.
And so you just show up out there.
Yeah.
And you're not alone in this. This is happening. I mean, lots and lots of the company you worked for, how many people were they employing in that area roughly?
So they were a Canadian based company.
Okay.
So they came down, they were employing around 1,000, 1,500.
Okay.
But there were, at its peak, I think there was 40 or 50,000 additional people, not from previous consensus that had come from other states to work specifically for work.
So that's an enormous workforce. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have like, we've already said don't have the housing infrastructure for this. Yep. So they're bringing in portable, but then like, they've got to get groceries. They've got to get supplies, things like this.
So every day was Black Friday at Walmart. Every day. They got to a point, this is no joke, they got to a point where they stopped stocking the shelves because 24/7 people were just emptying them. So they would just bring skids in and line, just leave them and line the aisles with them. That it was insane. And when you went to Walmart, you bought as much as you possibly could because you were in a checkout line for 2-3 hours.
Oh, man, 4 hours. Word.
Man.
Just it waiting. Is like Black Friday.
Right. Exactly. So you went out there because your brothers kind of called you out there. Did you see them much, or were you just constantly out in the field or resting?
We worked for the same company. And so starting off, I was put onto the same job as one of my brothers, but I didn't see the other two for at least a month. Where we lived in the same house. Yeah. And we went a month, I think a month the first time, my very first trip out there. At the time when I went out there, you could work as much as you wanted to. There was no regulation on working. So in the oil field, it's 7 days a week, at least what we were doing, 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, typically 2 to 4 hours of drive time a day. On top of that, 12 hours, excuse me.
Wow.
That's a long day of work.
So yeah, anywhere from 14 to 16 hours total. And you work 7 days a week. A lot of guys went on like a 4-2. When I first moved out, I had it out to prove that that was worth me moving there and moving my family there. So my very first stint in the oil field was 92 days straight without a day off.
Oh my gosh.
We were working 12 to 14 hour days. Came home for 2 weeks, went back out and worked another 65 or 66 days without a day off.
Goodness.
So
is that like legal?
Well, turns out it is. It is.
So I feel like some sort of labor law was just like being like worked around or something. Yeah.
The biggest thing was it was proving it was financially beneficial to move, having the kids out. And
sure. So you guys found a place to live out there.
Yep. Our first townhouse, it was 2-bedroom townhouse, and we paid almost $4,000 a month for it. Man. Not including utilities.
Steal of a deal.
Yeah.
And did North Dakota become home? I mean, did it become home for you?
Absolutely. No, it definitely did. We did the production testing thing for a while. Actually, let's go back a little bit. Leaving Indiana wasn't hard because as an adult, as a dad, as a dude with kids, I had, up until that point, I had no opportunity. There was no opportunity to be a good dad. Couldn't provide, no matter what I tried. Moving to North Dakota for me was a big, I was proud to be there.
Yeah.
I was proud to be able to do the things that I could do to support my family. And then it was really just work for the really long time, before we found church.
Yeah.
Then it turned into home.
Yeah.
So for the longest time for me, it was just work. Abby had to tolerate a lot of that, obviously with me being gone. She had the two kids, the two boys with her, but.
And your kids were how old at that time?
At that time, I moved out there about 6 months before they came out.
Okay.
When I moved out, it was a week before my second son's second birthday.
Okay.
So three and one turning two.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
And I'm sure that wasn't easy on you as a dad or a husband to be gone and working so much. But at the same time, you had to provide for them, and this is an opportunity when anywhere else here in Indiana you couldn't find that opportunity.
And it's helpful to remember, like 2008 and 2009, there it was nearly 20% unemployment in this county. Things were I was in college right around that time, and was working for a design firm that did exterior graphics for the RV industry. And I just remember like going in 1 week, production is happening, going in the next, it's like a ghost town, you know, just like things just shut down so quick. Like I'm like, I'm amazed that you can like get people out of here this quick. Like it just like so quickly. And it felt it felt a little dystopian. Like it was just like, you know, I don't know what the Great Depression was like. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, obviously didn't live that. I have grandparents that were young during those years, but like a real sense of if you were in a place, you know, if life was kind of, how shall I say this? Like when it feels like options are basically being taken away, like mm-hmm. where the route that you can take is less and less. And I mean, for me, it was like, well, I guess I can push my loans off a little longer while I just keep on doing school for a time.
Just keep doing school.
That's why I've got a graduate degree. This people think it's because I was interested in academics. It's no, I was keeping the loans away. Yeah. You need to understand that was the financial management plan. So you're out there and you said it. You found a faith community.
Mm-hmm.
That you guys connected with. So where was that? Who was that?
That was the Pursuit Church in Minot, North Dakota. If anyone's ever out that way, check them out. They're incredible. Mm. They caught our attention. Okay. Before that, I didn't have a huge, I was born and raised in a church here in, near Syracuse, left the church life around the time that I turned 18, a little bit sour about it. Mm. So when we moved out to North Dakota, I'd found a church. Abby had gone for a period of time without me. I was still working nonstop. She finally said like, hey, you need to come to church with us. So I started going to the church and the very first service was hooked.
Mm-hmm.
Never experienced church like that in my life. They're a non-denominational church that is just good. Mm-hmm. It's the good, full of love, community. And they preached about Jesus. Mm-hmm. That was it. Yep. That was the number one thing.
Yep.
I fell in love with the church. The reason that we remember the church is because mind you, Minot wasn't always on the up and up. At one point, they shut down strip clubs that used to be in Minot.
Mm-hmm.
The church bought one that came available.
As one does.
As one does, as most churches do. And their ad, they did a radio ad campaign right when they very first started. It was a new church in an old strip club. And it caught my attention so severely that I went up and told the pastor at the first service that we went to, like, I'm here because I heard that.
Mm-hmm.
I remembered it. Abby was going here. That's why I'm here. I absolutely fell in love with the church instantly. The Holy Spirit was working through Tom Foisey's, the head pastor there, just hearing the words that very first Sunday was just incredible. And it was the first time I'd ever felt leaving church like, man, I want to hear, mm-hmm. like, I just want more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think for some of us that have been, that have been in church for a while, have worked in churches, have volunteered in churches, I think it's just good to hear that people can have that experience, because I think if we're all honest, it's easy to get jaded, like, oh, people don't have those kind of experiences anymore. Or that's you know, like it can, when it starts to be, you know, depending on what your experience is, like, oh, the kind of the machine just kind of turns and it churns and some people come and some people leave. And it's, is there anything powerful that's happening here anymore? You know, it's easy to ask that kind of question. And yet for you, there it was, like something, it was kind of like a shock to the system, like kind of an eye-opening thing. So now you're going to church. Is the job changing at all? Are you making, what are you doing now?
Yeah. So I worked my way up at the company that I was at, from field assistant to night operator, day supervisor. So I moved out in 2012, and this is right around 2014. I had been working basically nonstop for those 2 years. And my wife and I had a conversation. She's like, I really need you to be around more. As one might, after 2 years of solitude.
Reasonable, yeah, right. Abby. Very reasonable.
So a position had come available for the company that I was working for to do sales. So it was home-based. I worked out of an office close to us. That was my first real sales job. Fell in love with it.
And I just be clear, you're selling what?
Services for the oil company or for the oil field. Mm-hmm. So we did production testing. So I would go to like the main oil companies themselves who were who the producers, and we would say, hey, we offer this service. Here's our pricing. Use us.
Gotcha.
Gotcha.
So 2015, I was working sales, and then I was doing some side work in the field as a supervisor. They were just low on employees or whatever. And the company men that I was working with, there's the oil company has a company man on each of these locations that makes all the decisions and signs all the bills. So we kept running into this issue where we needed a specific type of light plant generator to power our office trailer. He'd have to run around and find one. So finally I just asked, I said, hey, if I get a light plant, will you rent it off of me? I'll start a company and do it on the side, little side hustle.
Yeah.
He said, yep, sure. If I don't have to screw with trying to run down a piece of equipment for you every single job, that'd be great. Okay. So I started a rental company, as one does, for some side change, and didn't have any money to start it. I mean, we made great money, but you spend also the cost of living is $3,000
and it's a lot. I mean, you have to come up with capital is a significant challenge.
So at the time, my brother and I were messing around with hunting rifles. We were trying to build long range rifles. It was something we saw on YouTube where someone had made long range rifle.
Andy, I feel like the story he's telling right now is that something like Josiah and Micah would totally do. Of course, they're considerably younger than these guys. But you know what? It's a childhood dream. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it was a challenge of 1,000-yard rifle for under $1,000.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, I bought mine at a pawn shop. It was a 300 win bag. For this little competition. Anyway, long story short, I traded that gun for my first piece of equipment.
Mm.
That's how I started the business. A gentleman that I knew had light plants that he was trying to get rid of. I said, I got no money, but I have a gun.
Do you feel like this is a North Dakota, like that North Dakota specifically maybe really facilitated this sort of?
Yeah, absolutely. It's perfect. That would never have taken place here. No.
I got a gun. Yeah. Oh, great.
Right. So he was all about it. Great. So I traded him this rifle for this generator, rented the generator out for a period of time, bought a couple more generators, bought an office trailer, was renting all of this stuff out through a series of events. At that point I was still working full time for the production testing company. Had switched to a different one. Due to some unforeseen circumstances, and I was working at that company and doing the side rentals. So I'm working 14 hours in the day. I would drive my 2 hours home, drop off my hands, say hi to Ab, drive back to the city that I was just at 2 hours, service all the light plants or move them or whatever, finish that up at night, drive back to sleep for about 2-3 hours, go pick up my hands, drive back out. So my first truck had 500,000 miles on it. Did that for a few months.
I mean, Mark, I just have to say, like, I mean, I have a headache already just listening to this, because I like, it's incredible. There's the family challenge, but it's incredibly taxing. By the way, Mark is, for those of you not watching, Mark is slamming an energy. One of my favorite energy drinks, by the way, is slamming an energy drink as we speak.
Yeah.
Just the tax on your body. Like,
I mean, I know I'm older now. I could never do that, but I mean, I don't know.
Earlier
that I could do
we
it then.
Said I was 39 and I, for those of you who can't see, I look like I'm 57. So now it's taking its toll.
Well, you know, maybe Amy's into older men. I just like, what is pushing you forward in all of this? Because it like, I think the average person looks at that like, oh, I'm going to work in such a way where I'm getting just a few hours of sleep, a ton of dash time driving. Cause that's the other thing. Like, out west there, and you and I, right. You and I in the last year, I mean, when we were out in the Tetons and you're taking a trip through those states and South, you know, for some South Dakota and whatnot, like there's just expanses. Like it's hard for, I think even thus in like rural Midwest or whatever, it is a special kind of massive expanse between places with nothing going on. And just the tedium of that, like the fact that you didn't like fall asleep behind the wheel. Did you ever fall asleep behind the wheel? I have to feel like that was like a great opportunity.
Not officially. I've definitely hallucinated behind the wheel. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of times when I couldn't continue. Mm-hmm. I was at least conscious enough to know that I couldn't keep driving.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was less than 20 minutes from my house and had to stop.
Okay.
Yeah. And sleep. In my truck on the side of the road. I'm like, I can't keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's the other thing. Like I've been in that situation. I think maybe one time in my life where it's not like you're tired, like normal kind of tired. your brain is doing something. Like your brain is going into it. Like it's a different mode, right? Where you're it's like, it's not a normal reality.
I was once so tired I had West Nile virus and didn't know it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I had stayed up for almost 5 days straight because we'd gotten so busy and I didn't have enough employees. And I had finally gotten to go home for a night, was hanging out outside with a friend of Abby and ours, and get bit by a mosquito. And contracted West Nile virus.
I also want to go over the irony of this. Out of all the things that could have happened to him in this process, it's a mosquito that brought him.
Mosquito that brought me to my knees.
Brought him to his knees. Okay.
Yeah.
What is pushing you so hard to do these things that I think a sane person would say no to?
Opportunity.
Okay.
Being in Indiana, I felt like a bad dad.
Okay.
I felt like I couldn't provide for my kids.
Yeah.
That opened up a world of I can provide for my kids better than I ever could have imagined. Mm-hmm. I'll just keep going.
Yeah.
So I just did. I just kept pushing.
And then, but then something changed.
Yeah.
What was it?
So I had a pretty, so back to the company's growth, through a change of events, the companies that I was renting equipment to, had a falling out with their service provider for production testing. So they asked me if I would provide production testing services for them. At the time we had generators, we had office trailers. I didn't have semi trailer size giant pressure tanks. But I did make a friend who did, and he owned a rental company, phenomenal couple of guys from Canada. And through that relationship, he, again, didn't have money to go buy pressure vessels, didn't have money to pay him the hundreds of thousands of dollars for rent on these things. But through that relationship and through opportunity, he actually gave me for 6 months, gave me nonstop use of whatever equipment I needed. So the company blew up overnight. We went from a side hustle for some scratch to a multi-million dollar company where I had tons and I had a lot of employees.
Wow.
And we got our feet wet with that. Again, I had done sales in this, so I had made some pretty substantial contacts, but landed another contract and blew up again. So it went from basically nothing to huge, from huge to way bigger than I should have ever been in charge of. when that happened, I don't think I was ready for it. And I had a crazy mental breakdown. Mm. I was pursuing the feeling of being proud of myself as a father to just trying to maintain. Mm-hmm. I've been nonstop running for 4 years at that point. Yeah. I had almost 70 employees. The company was just going crazy. And when it was at its peak, I was at my lowest. Mm-hmm. So then I had my surrender moment. Yeah. So when I woke up in the middle of the night, it was like 2:30 AM bawling, just woke up from deep sleep, crying, got in my truck, took off, surrendered everything, and instantly had a moment of peace. Mm-hmm. It was the first time. I mean, it was peace without understanding, mm-hmm. genuinely just unexplainable peace. That changed the trajectory of the company and myself with my family. I got a lot more involved in church. Then COVID came around. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that word. Yeah. Okay.
What a time.
Yes. Yeah. So from my deduction, I can't say this is exactly everything that happened, but in the oil field, oil companies aren't necessarily allowed to control the market by supply and demand. So they can't shut in a well to bring the supply down. Hmm. They're governed by federal regulation. Mm-hmm. When COVID hit, the government put that into the decision of the oil company.
Mm. Oh.
So the oil companies shut everything down in a matter of 48 hours. I had 62 employees working 24-hour shifts, and then within 48 hours, I had zero.
Wow.
Instant. Shut everything off. So then we have COVID and no work. And luckily, I was on the up and up emotionally, so I was able to navigate. Had an opportunity to sell the company in 2021 and started working at the church.
As one does.
Yes. Right.
As one does.
Right.
So the church that you had been attending.
Yep. Yep.
An opportunity opened up there.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you go and do at this church?
So I took over the worship director position. Worship director, not pastor. I didn't lead worship.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a singer. As you can tell by my beautiful voice. Mm-hmm. Wonderful talker, horrible singer. No, I took over the worship side of the church, and then ended up inheriting the production side as well. So worship and production director.
Again, this sounds pretty standard. Hey, we see you're good at these things. How about we expand your kingdom impact?
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
This is the life that Andy lives. So I should ask at this point, like, you're experiencing, it's a massive change to go from the marketplace right. that you were in.
Yeah.
And doing the things that you were doing and have the responsibilities that you had
mm-hmm.
to moving in to the special world of vocational ministry, mm. which, you know, we talk about the behind the scenes, seldom seen things of being a railroad conductor, being in the oil business, and people are like, oh, yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot in common. There's a lot in common. Yeah. There's some, okay, those are interesting fields to be in, all of that. And then ministry is a different kind of, it's a different kind of different.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it is.
So did you go in like bright-eyed and hopeful and just thinking like this is going to be like, I mean, obviously it was a significant life change that you were making. What kind of whiplash did you experience through all of that?
So one thing I'd learned with the business and all of the ups and downs of owning the business, the best I felt was when I didn't make the decision. Mm. When I gave it up to God and said, whatever you want me to do, mm-hmm. I'm down. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wherever you push me.
Perfect.
I'm in.
Yeah.
This was one of those mm-hmm. opportunities.
Yeah.
And I talked about it for a period of time. I didn't take the decision lightly. We had a lot of prayer, a lot of conversation together. She had been at that point, she'd been working at the church for several years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
When that position opened up and I was unsure and then finally got an answer. It was, you've trusted me. You felt that that's all you need to do. Mm-hmm. So I did. I moved into it. The duties that came in those positions were stuff that I had found interesting and just took the time to learn on my own.
Yep.
And so moving into the position wasn't a difficult thing. Realizing what vocational ministry is mm-hmm. was obviously a whole new world.
Yeah.
But yeah, it wasn't, I don't know. I didn't feel the insane whiplash of lifestyle change or
great.
I think I was just like we talked earlier about not wanting to fall into monotony. It's mm-hmm. just,
yeah,
I was ready for something and this God said, yeah, I got you. Mm-hmm. This is it.
I'm going to go on a limb and say that your salary changed.
Yes.
Probably a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that okay?
Yeah. I'll say yeah. It was calculated into the decision. Mm-hmm. It was a substantial decrease, obviously.
Because, by the way, he had director after his name, which is code talk in church circles for you get to make less. I'm half joking, but also from my experience, mostly accurate.
Yeah.
So.
But I'm sure that the stress level and the time and the amount of time that you had to spend with your family.
Yeah.
Probably. I don't want to say made up for that, but it helped.
It definitely helped. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I did go into vocational ministry with the same mindset that I had in the oil field, which was just drive.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure.
Just run until you can't.
Yep.
So like I was redoing the stage for Easter and we had a massive blizzard come through. Well, I have a very sizable pickup truck mm-hmm. and I said, okay, I can make it.
No problem.
So it was things like that I did push the limits. I have pictures of that. We had snow that came from the roof straight out. I think it was about 6.5 feet of snow.
Man.
So, Mark's daughter, Paige and Molly are close to age and they've been hanging out the last few days. Some, and Paige was telling a story about how, we can see if Mark says this is accurate, where he tells Paige, honey, stay away from the barn because if the snow comes off the roof, it'll kill you.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah.
That's legit.
That seems possible, mm-hmm. I guess. But the special kind of snow
is about 2 feet over my head.
Wow. Wow. So. Yeah. Jeez Louise.
Our neighbor was a tip was so my truck got stuck at the beginning of our road my neighbor got out his Bobcat with tracks and it got stuck on the road. So I got myself home, but I mean, we were there for several days and it just wouldn't, it didn't stop.
Amazing.
Just kept going.
Man.
Amazing. So, so you're working at, so how long did you work at the church for?
I worked at the church for 3 years.
Okay.
Right around 3 years.
Yeah. And so, so in that time, you've kind of, again, so you've been there long enough, you've kind of recalibrated to the new rhythm of ministry life, spending time with the family, and then another change, and then another change as does occur,
in the Graff household,
in the Graff household. So what comes next?
So we had started foster care. We started, God had blessed us to a point where, we were, we attended a, the summit, Craig Rochelle puts on.
Global leadership.
Yes. Yep. Global Leadership Summit. And they had a gentleman that was on there that had talked about foster care, and it really struck, really close to home for Abby and I. So we started fostering, we had, I think, about 13 or 14 kids that had come through our house before, our girls now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we started fostering, towards the end. I don't know how we're supposed to, I don't know if we should get into the ending of this yet. So fostering, the end of our fostering story is what led us to move back to Indiana.
Gotcha. Okay. So the, I think the biggest thing, like, so you have this family already, this biological family, and you make a decision to enter into foster care, which I think for those that we have plenty of friends that have been through the foster care process.
Plenty that have been on the show.
We do time and time again, hear a reoccurring theme. And the theme is that this is a very broken system that is overrun with any number of problems. And that there are a bunch of really wounded kids in the process. And I think if you really start, looking at the problem in the grand scope, it just can seem like insurmountable. Like how in the world are we ever going to actually make a dent in this, in this problem? Right. At the same time, my guess is with you, you're like, well, we can do something. We can start somewhere. So you made that decision.
We made that decision. We had multiple kids that had come through the house. And then Piper is our oldest. She came into the house. Going into foster care, we had some very close friends who were in foster care. We had and they told us right off the bat, establish rules. And as much as it breaks your heart, don't break those rules. So age appropriate kids that would come into the system, we wouldn't go over a certain age. We wouldn't go, we had a young daughter in the house. We didn't take any teenagers. No violent. And so stay within our boundaries. So, throughout the process, we found out really quickly with the foster care system that you live as much good as you're trying to do. You live in that time with at an arm's length. Because there you find out very quickly that you don't have a say. Don't have a say. You're not their parent. They're not your child. Reunification is the goal, no matter what horrible things that you've been a witness to. That's the goal. So with all of the kids that had come through the house, we loved them. We cared for them. We showed them what a family could be as best we could. We showed them who Jesus was. We showed them as much love as we possibly could. We always knew they weren't ours.
Mm-hmm.
Then Piper came into the picture, and she very quickly, without any of us even understanding or knowing or realizing at the time, changed. We didn't interact with her that way.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost immediate that when she came into our house and into our lives, it was just different. She just became part of our family.
Mm-hmm.
Was really, which was tough because we'd done a really good job at not getting hurt. And then Piper showed up. She was just a part of the family. And to go through the process of foster care and reunification with someone who you now view as part of your family was it was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely horrible. You know, the atrocities that this little girl at 4 months old had gone through that human beings don't, you and I, the three of us will never ever experience.
Yeah.
And she did at 4 months. She came into our lives and dealing with the process over the following 3 years of not knowing if she was sticking it out, mm-hmm. if they were going to finally make the right decision and let us adopt her,
mm-hmm.
or if they were going to put her back in that horrible, horrifying situation that she was in. In the meantime, she had a sister. We got a call that this person was going to have another child, and they asked us before the baby was born, would you guys be interested? They're sisters. We want to keep them together. Yada, yada. I said, to be perfectly honest, I said no.
Mm-hmm.
With what we were dealing with Piper, and not knowing if we were going to be allowed to adopt, consistently having to get gut checked.
Yeah.
As the people with her best interest in mind, I said no. And Ab just through an insane, insane amount of prayer and petition with God just said, I really feel that we do need to take her.
Yeah.
I said, okay. And we picked her up from the hospital at 3 days old. And continued this horrifying back and forth of, well, we haven't gotten any drug tests done because she has been unavailable and just some really insane things happened where it was just like Abby and I were so defeated that it was just, you can't imagine like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like this is still even a question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, anyway, so we have these two girls, both still working at the church, through circumstances, both of the girls had their parental rights terminated,
mm-hmm.
went into court. The judge happily signed the adoption paperwork. We adopted these two girls.
Mm-hmm.
So without the business, now that we have these two girls adopted in our lives, at this point, our families had moved away from North Dakota. And we were kind of just in this place of, we'd always had an anchor to be there. It was home. That was where our roots were, as a family. But it finally got to this place where we were coming home for funerals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, we had the discussion of like, we don't feel anchored here anymore. Let's move home. So we moved back to Indiana with our two new little girls, Piper and Pippa. So it's Porter, Preston, Page, Piper, and Pippa, by the way.
and neither Abby or I have any peas in her.
So. Way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. So we moved back and I discovered ViewRail, which shameless plug, ViewRail is absolutely incredible. Owner's incredible. His family's incredible. Phenomenal place to work. Love it. Christ-centered.
Good.
Absolutely phenomenal place.
We didn't pay Mark to say that.
But Len, if you're listening.
Right. Full disclosure.
Pull that up, Jamie.
Jamie, pull up the website. We don't have a Jamie. Someday we'll get a Jamie.
We need a Jamie.
We should honestly, Andy and I have said this before. We should at least get at least two of our kiddos in here behind the monitor screen so they look like they look like they're pulling things up.
Yeah. They can be our producers over there.
So now that you guys are here and Mark and Abby are thankfully they're distant neighbors of ours. They live sort of catty corner across, as we figured out,
1547 feet.
1547 feet.
That's pretty
not exact. A creepy number at all for Mark to know.
As the crow
flies. Yes, as the crow flies, because we were trying to figure out for our two girls how they're gonna who they need to trespass, what yard they need to trespass in to get to each other's house. Now that you guys are here, I just wonder, like, what I mean, really, when you look back, and I'm guessing that you see the hand of God and provision throughout the way. And you have found yourself in this place now with this family that you have and these just really wonderful, from the ones that I've met so far, really, really wonderful kiddos, really cool kiddos. What are you excited about now? Like what really keeps you, hopeful?
Honestly, the thing that keeps me the most hopeful is in making that transition from North Dakota, where we were completely established, back to Indiana. The biggest fear as a dad was that it was going to emotionally cripple one or all of my kids.
Yeah.
Because that's a decision that we made as a family, but Abby and I understood what that move would be. Mm. My kids didn't at the time. So I think that seeing them blossom here and it be a better situation, honestly, than we had before, as much as we loved North Dakota, just seeing them blossom and grow and expand and their faith life hasn't been touched. They're still active and happy and love God and they're followers of Jesus. And not have the move or leaving the church that we loved so much affect that. That's what I'm excited about.
That's awesome.
I'm excited for that to continue to grow.
Well, and I hope that you, first of all, Mark, you're going to have about 50 new friends after this episode. as we're making connections with people. Do you and Abby feel like you guys have, do you feel like you have a team here? Like a people around you?
I feel like we're forming our team. I feel like, we're progressing along as well. I mean, it's hard to replace 13 years of, connection, but it's happening really well here.
Good.
I think we're both, Abby just went through the way at the Maple City. And met a group of really awesome people. She's got a lot of people at work that she's really close with, and same for me. And through our serving at church, which we discovered in North Dakota too, through serving at church, here's my other plug, serve at church, because you will form an insanely tight group of people. So we're working on that. We're building that.
Good. Well,
yeah,
we hope we can be part of that. We can hope we be part of that.
Yeah.
You're going to be part of that whether you want to or not now.
Good.
Well, and we want to thank you for coming on today. Like, yeah. It's been incredible. Like I said, when Joel came to me and said, hey, this is the story, and I got to hear it. So, but before we let you go, you have to go through one thing.
And now it's time for the Dudes and Dads pop quiz.
That's correct.
All right. So the pop quiz, if you've never joined us before, is just a time when I like the word pepper. We're going to pepper
Mark
with questions that he can't prepare for.
Yep.
Have nothing to do with, I would say nothing to do with the interview, but he's been through so much that it might actually cover
something. It could come back around. So I think I know the question I'm going to ask.
Go first. For it. You
ask. Okay, here we go. Mark, of all available items, what is your favorite gadget right now?
Mm. Favorite gadget? This watch.
Okay.
I bought this I'm buying this. I haven't bought it. Sorry, Jake. I'm buying
Jake,
this watch.
I want you to know that Mark has a watch on that belongs Garmin. To
aviation watch Garmin, for my powered parachute.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, okay. So this gives you all the necessary, like an altimeter and
here's our right there.
Okay. So what is it? Yep. He's okay. Oh, nice. Okay. I can see the horizon.
We're 880 feet above sea level.
Okay. Cause we're on the second floor right now in Indiana and second floor in Indiana where we are. That's where we know we 850 Sweet. Feet. Okay. Favorite gadget. Fantastic.
All right. Oh man. So you said you bought a powered paramotor or parachute, whatever. Yes. Have you ever used one before?
No, nope. This is my first go. And I will be getting training.
He's saying this for the benefit of his wife. I just know that let's just call this what it is. There's been, if you can't read between the lines, some discussion around the wisdom of going into the powered parachute, it's a special group of people apparently that strap a
elite
an elite group of people that strap a motor and a prop to their back put a parachute above them and say see you later
and again we talked about pre-show but to be honest like it's something I would love to do
it sounds super wild and fun.
I have two of them.
All right. Oh, don't tell me that.
I have two of them.
All right.
First ever Dudes and Dads DIY air show coming to you.
If we do that, I'm strapping a GoPro to my head and filming it all.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
All right.
Julie, if you're listening, I'm sorry. My next question, we've been doing this one. I think this is a good go-to. Mark, a restaurant reaches out to you and says, we were naming a sandwich after you. What's on the sandwich, Mark?
Ooh, what's on it?
What's on it?
Yeah.
If I order
the Mark at the local store,
I want the Mark.
What do I get?
What are we getting?
A breakfast skillet.
Oh, that's the first.
Yeah. That's the first one. Okay.
The whole breakfast skillet.
The whole deal. Okay.
With sausage gravy.
Oh,
yeah. Awesome.
Okay.
Eggs over easy. Okay. Cheese.
I'm going to stick with that same theme of restaurants.
Yes.
What is your go-to restaurant? What's your favorite restaurant? Whether it's a chain or something local or something out where you used to live, what's their favorite place to eat?
So I'm a very much, I eat to live. I don't live to eat. Okay. So that's a hard one. I'll eat anything. You're lucky I haven't eaten your phones since we've been sitting
here. Okay.
I will say that since we've been back, used to be Ponderosa.
Oh, Rancho Viejo.
Yes. El Rancho Viejo.
I love
that's a good one.
Yeah.
Rancho Viejo.
We do call it the Ponderosa Mexican because everyone remembers that it was a Ponderosa.
Yeah. But I can't remember the name of
it. El Rancho Viejo. Okay. Fantastic. My final question will be, among your family members in a zombie apocalypse, who lasts the longest, Mark?
Who lasts the longest besides me?
Okay. So
that's an appropriate answer. You can answer
so
that.
So right now we're going to assume that, all things being equal, that you last the longest.
Okay.
Do you think that's likely the case? But so besides you then, who lasts the longest?
So the non-judgmental answer or question, my wife does because she's the first one I protect.
Okay.
All right.
That's adorable.
No judgment.
That's
there.
Adorable. Do you think apart from your presence in any of it, if they're all mm-hmm. like, if you're like, I don't know,
solo.
Yeah. If you're out of town mm-hmm. and the zombie apocalypse hits
Preston's
going the distance.
Yep.
This is a multifaceted, like,
okay, I got it. Yeah. Is this due to his wit, his speed, his tenacity? What's the key?
It's kind of his lack of care.
Okay.
So okay. I think that would allow him a level head in a situation.
He's just going to, he's not going to get into the weeds of, yeah. Oh my gosh, it's a zombie apocalypse. What will we do?
Yeah.
He's just going to remain cool, calm, and collected.
That's it.
And take the best course of action.
Mm-hmm. That's it. I don't have any other questions.
Okay.
Because Preston,
congratulations. You've survived or will survive the zombie apocalypse.
Only though if your dad's out of the
picture. Unfortunately, your dad has to be out of the picture. Yeah. Fantastic. Mark, congratulations. You have successfully passed the Dudes and Dads Pomp Quiz. Flying colors. If there was a trophy to give you, we would, but there's not. So, hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode. We appreciate y'all hanging out with us. As always, you can head over to dudesanddads.com for previous shows, the show notes, all the good stuff about Mark. Mark is probably intentionally very low key on the social media. So, but we'll tell you more about him. But in the show notes, you'll be able to see these episodes and others.
Also, head over to dudesanddads.com/support. This show runs not thank only you. On our corporate sponsors, that's but also right. your personal support, and we love that.
Yeah, so, by your sheer joy and finances, we continue on. So thank you so much. Dudes and Dads Podcast at gmail.com is a great way to send us an email with future show recommendations, harsh criticisms, or perhaps that casserole recipe that I've been asking for.
All right.
Whatever the case might be.
With that, man.
Yeah.
Grace.
Yes, we wish you grace.
And good casserole.